And adds to the cost, he thought. The flowers were wilting rapidly now, the stems curving down into a U-shape. Their sunlight-fired coronal cloak had faded away as the petals darkened, and with it had gone a lot of the mystique. They were just ordinary dying flowers now. "How do the cuppers know where to wire the cups?" he asked. "Look at them. Every flower is bending over above a cup." He glanced up and down the aisle. "Every one of them." Louise gave him a superior smile. "If you are born on Norfolk, you know how to place a cup." It wasn't just the weeping roses which were reaching fruition. As they trotted the horses over to Wardley Wood, Joshua saw flowers on the trees and bushes closing up, some varieties leaning over in the same fashion as the roses. In their peaceful glade the wild rose bushes along the rock pool seemed flaccid, as if their shape was deflating. Flowers lolled against each other, petals agglutinating into a quilt of pulp. Louise let Joshua undress her, as he always did. Then they spread a blanket down on the rocks below the weeping roses and embraced. Joshua had got to the point where Louise was shuddering in delighted anticipation as his hands roved across her lower belly and down the inside of her thighs when he felt a splash on his back. He ignored the first one and kissed Louise's navel. Another splash broke his concentration. It couldn't be raining. There wasn't a cloud in the barren blue sky. He twisted over. What? Norfolk's roses had begun to weep. Out of the centre of the carpal pond a clear fluid was exuded in a steady, monotonous drip. It was destined to last for 10 to 15 hours, well into the next Duchess night. Only when the pod was well drained would it split open and release the seeds it contained. Nature had intended the fluid to soften the soil made arid by weeks without rain, allowing the seeds to fall into mud so they would have a greater chance of germination. But then, in 2209, a woman called Caris Thomas, who was a junior botanist in the Ecological Assessment Mission, acting against all regulations and common sense, put her finger under a weeping pod, then touched a single pearl of glistening fluid to her tongue. Norfolk's natural order came to an immediate end. Joshua wiped up the dewy bead from his skin and licked his finger. It tasted coarser than the Norfolk tears he'd so relished back in tranquillity, but the ancestry was beyond doubt. A roguish light filled his eyes. Hey, not bad. A snickering Louise was moved round until she was directly underneath the lax hanging flowers. They made love under a shower of sparkling droplets, prized higher than a king's ransom. The cuppers returned to the groves as the next Duchess night ended. They cut away the collection cups, now heavy with tears, and poured their precious contents into the ewers. It was a task that would take another 5 days of intensive round-the-clock labour to complete. Grant Kavanagh himself drove Joshua and Divey down to the county rose yard in a 4-wheel-drive farm ranger, a powerful boxy vehicle with tyres deep enough to plough through a shallow marsh. The yard was on the outskirts of Colsterworth, a large collection of ivy-clad stone buildings with few windows. Beneath the ground was an extensive warren of brick-lined cellars, where the casks were stored throughout their year of maturation. When he drove through the wide entrance gates, the yard workers were already rolling out the casks of last year's tears. "A year to the day," he said proudly, as the heavy iron-bound oak cylinders rattled and skipped over the cobbles. "This is your cargo, young Joshua. We'll have it ready for you in 2 days." He braked the farm ranger to a halt outside the bottling plant where the casks were being rolled inside. The plant supervisor rushed out to meet them, swearing. "Don't you worry about us," Grant told him blithely. "I'm just showing our major customer around. We won't get in the way." And with that he marched imperiously through the broad doorway. The bottling plant was the most sophisticated mechanical setup Joshua had ever seen on the planet, even though it lacked any real cybernetic systems. The conveyor belts actually used rubber pulleys. It was a long hall with a single-span roof, full of gleaming belts, pipes, and vats. Thousands of the ubiquitous pear-shaped bottles trundled along the narrow belts, looping overhead, winding round, filling nozzles, the racket of their combined clinking making conversation difficult. Grant walked them along the hall. The casks were all blended together in big stainless steel vats, he explained. Stoke County's bouquet was a homogenized product. No groves had individual labels, not even his.